Hello, it's Ed Gamble here from the Off-Menu podcast that you're currently listening to. I am on tour now. The show is called Hot Diggity Dog. Make sure you go and get yourself a ticket. I'm probably coming to a town near you if you live in the UK and Ireland. And Ireland, Dublin and Belfast. Do go to edgamble.co.uk, buy yourself a ticket, and I'll see you for an evening of Hot Diggity Dog.
Hot Diggity Dog!
Thank you, James.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome to the Off Menu podcast, kneading the dough of conversation, sprinkling in the chocolate chips of humour, rolling out with the rolling pin of great guys, and using the biscuit cutter of fantastic, wonderful friends, baking in the oven of nice, fun, and having a cookie of a podcast.
Oof. I'm not going to lie.
The best one I've ever done.
Yeah, flawless. Can't pick out anything wrong with that.
No. I gave myself too many elements there.
Yep. I thought at the beginning you were going to do like a pan of chocolat. I thought that was where we were going. You were making a pan of chocolat, and I was like, oh, is he going to say pod au castellar?
Okay, you can't come for me, and then that's what you've got as a backup.
I think that's pretty good.
Pod au castellar?
Yeah, like a pan of chocolat.
Absolutely.
Pan of chocolat, but it's a podcast.
You're not a punster, are you?
Pod au chocolat. Tim Vine did say that.
Pod au Tom.
Tim Vine did say that?
Tom Vine.
Tom Vine, that's a pun on Tim Vine. Tom Vine.
Short for tomato vine.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's good. Tomato on the vine.
Let's just agree to disagree. We're both great comedians.
Pod au castellar.
Podcastellar, the cookie cutter of great fun friends.
Yeah, we've done pretty well there on the Off Menu podcast with Ed Gamble and James Ancaster, where we invite a celebrity guest into the dream restaurant and ask them their favourite ever starter, main course, dessert, side dish and drink. Not in that order. And this week, our guest is...
Jamie Oliver. Jamie Oliver, legendary chef.
I mean, food man. You know...
He's done so much.
I throw the term national treasure around a bit on this podcast. Yeah, sue me. I'm going to say Jamie Oliver's a national treasure.
He is.
I watched Naked Chef as a teenager. It was the most comforting show on TV. And I think he has maintained that vibe throughout his career. I find a lot of the Jamie Oliver shows and the cookbooks quite comforting. They're warm, Ed. They're warm.
They are warm. And he's got a new book, James, which I'm very excited about. It's called Jamie Oliver Together. And it is out now. It's just come out. We're getting the hot exclusive on this.
And they're like full meals in there, starter, main course, dessert, just like this pod.
Yes.
Just telling you, if you have your friends around for dinner, and these are the courses you can make for everyone. There's loads of cocktails at the back as
that
well.
That is true, actually. I've just realised that. He's gone with the off-menu format of starter,
we're suing
main,
him.
Dessert.
So we're suing him.
I'll read it. Maybe in the back he says, shout out to the off-menu podcast for coming up with the starter, main and dessert format.
Yes. So we're going to sue him.
Yes.
See you in court, Jamie.
And we're in a good place to start the legal proceedings because we're in Jamie Oliver HQ today to interview Jamie.
We are. He's welcomed us into his HQ, even though we're about to slap him with a subpoena. Is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And we're going to get him with a subpoena when he comes in here. But, like, we're in, like, a room that's, like, half of it is a kitchen that is made for filming, and the rest of it is a studio. But downstairs there's a big open-plan kitchen, people cooking food. There's offices of people testing out food, trying
It's a very
food.
Exciting place to be.
Yeah. It feels like I'm... Do you know what? I'm in the hub.
Yeah.
That's what I feel like. I'm in the hub here.
And it's going to be very awkward when we have to kick Jamie Oliver out of his own hub.
Yes.
If he says the secret ingredient.
That would be a massive shame. We feel pretty bad about it, but I think we're pretty safe this week. And maybe people be annoyed that we're about to choose this as a secret ingredient, because it's always an ingredient that we don't like. And yes. If they choose it, we kick them out. But everyone will know that there's no way Jamie Oliver's going to choose this one, because he's gone on record saying he doesn't like it himself. Secret ingredient this week is... Turkey Twizzlers.
Turkey Twizzlers.
Okay, come on. Get off our back, guys.
Of course, very much the figurehead for the bad school dinners that Jamie took a stand against all those years ago.
Yeah, and good on him.
Good on him.
Good on him. He had the health of the nation's youth
and guess
in
what?
Mind.
When I was a little boy, I loved Turkey Twizzlers.
Yeah, I bet you did. I bet you put a big pile of Turkey Twizzlers.
Called it meat spaghetti.
Did you?
Put them all together, meat spaghetti.
Slurp it up. Spaghetti and meatballs.
I put one in my mouth and I go around to the girls... And I'd say, suck the other end, we'll Lady and the Tramp with a turkey twizzler.
Did you say that while you had the turkey twizzler in your mouth?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. The thing is about that, I don't know if you're joking or not. I don't know if you're making that up.
Yeah, dude. I went to a boys' school.
Oh, yeah. So you said it to the boys.
I said it to my French teacher.
Yeah.
Excuse me, miss.
No, he said, pardon-moi.
Pardonnez-moi, madame. You want another petit bijou for it?
She was impressed that you were giving French a go, so said, oui.
Yeah. Oui, Edouard. We ran away together.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
Nice end to the story.
Yeah.
Some stories have nice endings here on the Off Menu podcast. Ed ran away with his French teacher, who he did a Lady and the Tramp with a turkey twizzler with. That's very nice.
But if Jamie says turkey twizzlers, he's out of here.
Yep. Sorry, Jamie.
It's going to be désolé. Logistically quite hard. Je suis désolé, Jamie.
Yes.
Let's crack on with it, shall we?
Yeah, very excited. Not often we get a chef. We've had two in a row.
Two in a row.
Ainsley last week, Jamie Oliver this week. Let's see. What is the dream menu? Sorry. The off-menu... What bit do you do? You
this say the off is menu the off-menu menu of Jamie Oliver. Welcome, Jamie, to the Dream Restaurant.
I love your restaurant.
Welcome, Jamie Oliver, to the Dream Restaurant. We've been expecting you for some time.
Here we are. Now, this is a rare occurrence in the Dream Restaurant. We are actually... somewhere that you normally are. We're in your HQ.
Yeah.
So the decor is literally, you know, it might be how you have your dream restaurant.
Well, this is a studio,
anyway.
So it's one side normal and then three sides a bit odd.
Yeah.
White. But, this is where I work.
Fully functioning kitchen there.
Thank you. Are you not normally mobile? Are you normally in a central place?
No, We've been about,
yeah, but not normally with such sort of specific decor to the person we're interviewing.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah.
Like, so really, you're on my turf.
Really
is that a problem?
Like that.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. It feels like this was a real power play from you.
We're looking around. This is your HQ.
Yeah, I promise it's not a power play, but it definitely was a diary play,
yeah,
probably.
Sure. So. It's kind of amazing, this place, though. We walked in, there's a fully working kitchen downstairs. We came just after lunch, which was disappointing.
Mm.
Huge office, everyone working here. Obviously, chuffed beyond belief to be working here because they get an amazing lunch every day.
They do.
Mm-hmm. It's great.
Yeah, no, I'm lucky. I mean, it's taken me 20 years to get organised, just so you know. Like, the journey to here, we only got here 3 years ago.
Yeah.
That is 17 years of, like, busking it and crappy offices and, like, nicking the desk here and there. And I got to a point where I thought, actually... More so from the creative side, like if you can get creative people in one place and you're creating opportunity for like corridor meetings and sharing ideas and stuff. But if you're ever around at 12 o'clock, I'm not just saying this, come in. Like there's always a bit of grub.
You're going to regret that. Also, when we walked in, because you're met with that big open kitchen when you walk in downstairs And it was clearing up from after lunch, and there was a little boy, probably primary school age, and he was just sifting through a tray of corn on the cobs.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's the next Jamie Oliver. That's what I thought to myself. I was like, I could be looking at the next Jamie Oliver.
It could be.
No, I don't remember seeing this.
I saw a little boy. You saw a little boy, Benito? He's shaking his head. This doesn't look good. In my head, there was a little boy.
No, there was a little boy. That's actually one of our team's son. He's working, but like, there's no one to look after the kids at home. So
a
lot of our team here are parents. So I think like I've tried to work out like what does a good boss look like,
and
so that's one of the things a good boss has to do in this day
and
age.
Bring him in, let him sift through the corn on the cobs.
Yeah. Have you got kids, you two?
No.
It's really hard.
Yeah. This is what I've heard. This is why I don't have kids.
It's amazing but hard, and I think just like sometimes the simplest things make you feel like the world's caving in, like you just can't do
it. Mm-hmm.
And it's literally things like I've got no one to look after, so bring him in.
Yeah,
we love it, and so it happens fairly often. But yeah, my dad totally, because I grew up in a pub, and dad's a proper old-fashioned graft, like put your hours in. But like people can come and go when they want. They can work from, even before COVID, they could work from home Monday to Monday, Fridays. And my dad was so worried. He's like, you'll never get any work out of them. But I think in this day and age, like people just like, they'll put the graft in if people are flexible.
Yeah. So I've never wanted kids either. But lately, the corn on the cob in my house has been quite disorganised.
Is this a euphemism?
Maybe I could have a kid.
Yeah, sift through your corn on the cob.
Organise that corn on the cob.
Yeah.
For organisational reasons.
Yeah, just like doing a lot of admin for me. That kid didn't seem like a hard worker.
Are you quite an organised person in the kitchen? Do you have like everything in like the right drawers and lined up in the right way?
Yeah, so I think I've got it all in the places where at least I know where it is and it makes sense to me. I used to work in kitchens growing up and I know that I don't have strictly everything in the right place. If I was in a pub kitchen, it would probably be in the wrong place. But I know where everything is, makes sense. And I like to get everything chopped up and ready before I make something.
Oh, you're one of those.
Something.
Okay. I'm one of those people. Interesting.
So I think I'm organising that. And I don't like it even though I do leave the washing up most of the time.
What does your sock drawer look like?
That's quite good, actually.
Do you fold them up and like, put them in a line?
They're balled up.
Are they colour-coded?
They're not colour-coded. Yeah. They're all there balled up. And I used to do it. I don't know how yours looks, but I used to do it balled up, but with a bit, like the tongue's hanging out.
Oh.
You know that one?
Wow.
Where they're balled up, but that's like not completely balled up, not in perfect
balls.
That's
how balls. I do it.
Yeah, so like two little...
Together at the end, but then two little
tongues.
Almost like a little pair of trousers.
Wow.
Yeah.
But now I've got fully balled up because for a while, my flatmate, he'd always like, you know, fold all the clothes up because he was there for, he was more organised than me.
That's cute.
And he'd completely ball my socks up.
And you didn't like the tightness.
It felt like a bit of an invasion of pride. I was like, that's my socks and you're kind of completely balling them up.
But now
it's what I do.
Yeah.
Now I can't stand it when they're flapping out.
I had a revelation with boxer shorts.
Yes.
Have you ever heard the brand Saks?
No.
S-A-X-X. Oh, right. Like, so look, if one could give one like a gift.
Yes.
I'm not even joking, right? So, and I'm not, I have no relationship with the company at all.
I think you're about to.
The crew who we use, we had this moment, like, what are you wearing? They all pull up their little bits, Calvin Klein or something. I bought them all Saks.
Yeah.
If you want to have your balls cradled by an angel.
Yes.
All day.
Who doesn't?
Every day.
Yeah.
They have, this is the truth, TM, ballpark technology. Before you leave, I've got some downstairs. I'm going to show you some. I'm not going to give you them, but I'm going to.
So if someone said to them, what's Jamie like as a boss? They'd say, he makes us all wear the same pants.
Yeah.
Well, I don't have many men in the company.
Yeah.
We're like 85% ladies, so that wouldn't work. But for the men that are here, I have tried to... I'm not trying to get them onto Saks because I'm pushing like a cool brand.
Yeah.
It's got nothing to do with cool. In actual fact, they're not that cool to look at.
Yeah.
Yes.
I don't think.
But ballpark technology.
But ballpark. I'm not even joking.
Do you ever call people?
It's like, if you were saying, what's the one of the biggest revelations in the last 2 years?
Yeah.
It's that.
Yeah. Yeah.
So if you're a fella listening to this, if you don't believe me, then just try it because your eyes will go and then that is it. But then it also, if you're a woman listening to this and you want to get your fella a present for Christmas or birthday, honestly.
You should call new male employees into the office and say you're going to give them the sacks.
How do we get onto this? Oh, socks. Yeah. Socks.
Socks.
Yeah,
well, okay.
On socks, though, what's your strategy? Do you consciously buy them or you just get value things? Or
at the minute, I need to buy new socks. I'm aware of it. And I keep on thinking in my head,
how
come
on. How do you split up the thoughts of sports socks versus like going out looking fairly?
Oh, very clever. I don't do sports. So that's how I get around that.
Yeah, but
I don't go out.
I wear sports socks the whole time.
Oh, yeah?
Most of the time.
Ed never knows when he might need to run away.
Yeah.
Ed's always on the run. Got to be, yeah.
I wear tube socks. On his feet. A lot of the time, to be honest.
Okay.
I just got to wear M&S socks, old man socks. Yeah.
M&S is not to be shunned, though, is it? Well, I'm quite keen on M&S pants.
What about sacks, though?
Yeah.
You can't abandon sacks.
Not for men. Female. Right. I'm not into trendy female knickknacks.
No.
Uh-huh. Nah. Just give me, like, clean, fresh, like, utilitarian pants from Marks and Spencer's. I'll take that. I don't know. Yeah. Have you been to Asian Provocateur? I've done lots of presents there.
Yeah.
Why? How did? Yeah, yeah.
We didn't get. Don't ask us how I got
Asian
onto this.
Provocateur is amazing, but that just all looks like it hurts.
Yeah, faff, bit of a faff.
You want to be comfy in life.
We've watched you on TV over the decades, and you're a man with a lot of empathy. And I imagine if you saw someone wearing underwear that you thought looked painful, you wouldn't be able to enjoy it for yourself.
Yeah, especially if you're a chef in the kitchen and putting in a 12-hour shift, and you're like, damn, that's going to hurt.
Yeah, sure. You can't have that.
But it's a fashion thing as well, isn't it?
Yeah, oh yeah.
Types of underwear. So socks, so you're methodical, so you've got a spice rack that's in order.
No.
So your socks in the drawer with the bit hanging out doesn't correspond to how you treat your spice rack.
So he keeps his spices in the sock drawer.
Oh, yeah, all balled up in the socks.
It's potpourri, right? Or
delicious. No, so I've got, like, you know, I've got a cupboard, three shelves in the cupboard, bottom shelf has got all the spices in there, just in a random order, and I've got to kind of, like, peer over so that I can see the tops of them all.
Oh, I see.
And then there's stuff like, you know, the certain ones that are all green tops and I can't see the labels on them and I've got to pull them out one by one and I do think a spice rack would be easier.
Yeah. I quite like recycling jam jars for spice racks.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Little label on them?
Yeah, I had a revelation when I was much younger in my first flat. Like, when you use a jam jar and you wash it up, I had a simple shelf and I screwed the lid to the underneath of the shelf so that you just put the jam jars on so they float underneath.
Oh, nice. Oh,
and then good. Put the ones on top. So in a small amount of space, you can have like literally 30 spices and you can see it all.
Great.
And it's recycling.
That's great. That's
and it's
so
quick,
satisfying.
Quick release.
That is cool. Favourite spice?
My favourite?
Yeah.
Fennel seeds.
Oh, Sally. Now.
It's not my banned word, is it?
No, it's not your banned one. It's been the one in the past because
James
it's
hates
the
fennel.
One
Anything.
Food
yeah.
that I don't like.
Yeah.
Everything else I like.
No,
fennel,
I get it.
Fennel I wrestle with still. And I'm trying to get better at
but
it,
the
Jamie.
Seeds? Do you hate the seeds?
Yeah, so I've had, you know, the other day I had some fennel seeds in some pickled red cabbage with fennel seeds in them.
And got it pissed you
I
off.
Ate it. I wasn't, but those that element of it I'd prefer it without it. But
so like,
that's interesting. I wouldn't have expected fennel
seeds. Here's the thing, right? So all I would say, like, of course, personal preference, subjectivity and all that.
Yeah.
But there's some spices and herbs, let's say fennel seeds or bay leaf, where in recipes throughout hundreds and hundreds of years, you'll see like one or a tiny bit of that.
Mm-hmm.
And then you start saying, well, does it really make the difference? And what's the point? With both, like it, let's say with bay leaf or fennel, if you were to take like a loin of pork and put loads of bay and loads of fennel and salt and pepper and roast it hard and let it catch but don't overcook it and turn it and then hit it with vinegar, like the magic happens. So it's to what the point I'm making is like there's some things that I'll just put a little bit of this and no. My point is like go big.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So like. Whether it's fennel tea that's delicious, that's really simple, it's like really just quite nice if you don't want to just smash coffees all day, but you want something that's good for you. Or if you just want to like cook pork or chicken or a layer of a curry where it will disappear. But so I'm not saying you won't still hate it, but I do think like you just got to go big or go home with both of those things. And there's other, and you know, that's my revelation anyway. But each to their own, I guess.
I love that that's your number one, though. It's a big... I don't think I would have guessed
it. Well, I like it because it can go into the world of curries. It can go into all of the Mediterranean. It can get lost in things or it can own things. You can go poultry, meat, fish, gold. And but also you get the seeds dried, but you get the flower, you get the pollen, you get the bulb.
Yeah.
Like it's and it's so good for you. I just love fennel. But I hate the aniseed and absinthe.
Right.
Probably because I had a hallucinogenic experience.
Wow.
And I don't like it in whatever that shot is.
Sambuca.
Yeah, that's not horrible. Good.
But that was the signature of every end of bad night, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Joe, what? There's a very specific type of person who, when it hasn't been brought up at all, no one's been talking about it, but on a night out, comes back and they haven't asked anyone with a tray of sambucas, and you're like, you
motherfucker. I hate those people. Yeah.
No one's ever asked.
I don't like those people.
I like that guy.
Yeah, I would be tempted to hide laxative in their food just as a reprisal.
There should be a recipe in the new book.
Together.
For those people, if those people are coming around, a secret recipe where
one of the ingredients
is laxative.
It'd be like, you think you've all been invited here because I love you.
Yeah.
But it's actually, you've all done things in the last 10 years that deserve to be paid back.
They look around and go, hang on, we're all the people that bring
Sambuca
back without
us. They'll wake up a week later. Yeah.
I was looking through your new book, and I'm very excited about some of the recipes. I was mainly flicking through and looking at the desserts because I don't really make... I'm a big dessert fan, but don't really make desserts at home.
Yeah.
So I was looking at a lot of them, and the rhubarb and custard floating island is one that I might give a go.
Yeah, it's quite old school, and a lot of people don't... It's not really in restaurants, and it's not really in takeaways, and it's delicious. Oh, my God. I love rhubarb, eh?
Yeah.
But there's, like... And actually, everyone thinks... Obviously, making meringue, whether you go French, Swiss, Italian, they're all different styles. But like, you just whisk it up and then you poach it in milk.
Mm-hmm.
It's like so fast. So I love all that. There's quite a lot of nostalgia in that book, which is a nice thing.
Why do you think, was it like a conscious thing that you wanted to make it more nostalgic? Because that's how you were feeling at the time.
Every book I've written has a very clear point.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not necessarily for everyone, but without trying, like generally I'm solving a solution 1 year and then going on a kind of adventure the next.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't always work out like that, but they're very different books and they're popular in different ways. And like one's for more the mass people like answering a question, and one's kind of more kind of geeky foodie. And it's quite nice to do both because being in one or the other is kind of like not as exciting. But this one was kind of obviously sculpted by COVID and lockdown. And all the emotions that we've all had, I can presumptuously say we've all had, because we have. And that's about the concept of togetherness and like, all right, so yeah, the world's opening out again and restaurants and support your locals. And, you know, but at the same time, technology's never made it easier to get a takeaway. So you've got the latest technology in one hand and then you've got the concept of that on the other. And it's not saying that that should replace that. It's just that people are actually scared of doing dinner parties.
Yeah.
So, and I've done lots of recipe books, but I've never written one which is about, like, okay, like I've put a meal together. Here's a starter, main course, dessert. Here's some nibbles. Here's a cocktail. This is why I love it. Yeah. And it doesn't mean that you have to follow it.
Yeah.
It's just giving you an intention. And I guess what I would want, and I kind of, is that you were like, well, I don't like fennel, so I won't do like that bit.
Yeah.
But the fact that I've said what I like to do is, like, helps you kind of get... And so I think, like, for me, like, the idea of creating memories in a moment, as romantic and cheesy as that sounds, is true because that's what we've all missed out on.
Yeah,
and actually, we've learned lots, but actually everyone's got their COVID stories about mums and dads and friends and aunties or kids or this. And I've written this very differently so you get ahead, which doesn't sound like radically different, but it's a totally different style of writing.
Yeah.
So you get ahead, so then you don't have to sit there slaving away in the kitchen when your mates come around. You're kind of focused on your mates having a laugh with good stuff just ticking away in the background.
What about if someone, say, not necessarily me, quite likes having to go to the kitchen all the time so they don't have to interact with their guests? Is there anything in there for me?
Yeah, no, you just default and have your own cocktail in there. And that's
or just do it all ahead and then just sort of stand in the kitchen.
I think you've got the flexibility to be stuck in the kitchen.
Right, great, okay.
But the way that I put it together is that you don't have to be bolted there. Like, do stuff now and then enjoy yourself later. But even cocktails, which I've presented you with.
Yeah, you've given us a cocktail.
Is this the first time a guest has made us something?
It is.
Really?
Yes.
But you're like years into this. No one's ever given you anything in all these years.
No, but to be fair, we've never given a guest anything either. So
yeah. Catherine Ryan bought some... Pringles along with her, and we had some of that, to be fair.
Yes, Catherine Ryan did bring some Pringles, that's true.
Pringles. So this is a jammy margarita. You can batch this up, so you can do it the day before, the week before, whatever. But it's basically you take your favourite jam, tequila and Cointreau, lime, stir it up, put it over ice. It's a great cocktail to get things. What's quite nice is if you like another jam, then you just go for blackcurrant or blackberry. And, but I quite like cocktails. I grew up in a pub, so theoretically, I guess a snowball was a cocktail.
Yeah.
But I didn't really understand them until 20 years ago when I realised that a glass of something could be constructed to disarm the biggest arsehole on the planet. It's kind of like, you know, that kind of concept of like break glass in case of emergency. It's kind of like, no, actually, this is going to work. And the first one that I did was a sidecar. I don't know if you've ever had one of those, but that's, it's pretty strong and it works.
Yeah.
Sometimes what I didn't want to do, although I respect it deeply, is like cocktail dudes have got so technical and talented over the years, but I don't want to give you a recipe for a stock syrup that you've got to simmer away and put in a bottle and blah, blah, blah.
And that you never use again.
What have you all got? Jam. Great. So do a jam, you might. So you don't need the stock syrup.
Yeah.
Booze, jam, lime.
Great.
And then get your taste buds going.
That's super tasty.
My first cookbook ever. 20-minute meals.
Really?
Yeah.
30 or 15, actually. But I did an app that was 20.
It's 15, but he's quite slow.
Well, so, listen, I was 20 every time. 15-minute meals, then, it would have been. First time I moved out, that was the cookbook that I think was given to me. And
who gave it to you?
I think my parents, or my sister, maybe. And I did a lot of stuff in there. The one that I kept doing all the time and that could, eventually I could do it from memory, was the meatloaf. And I'd make meatloaf all the time. For whoever, I would make a whole meatloaf.
But how good's meatloaf is?
It was great. Yeah. I'd smash up the cream crackers.
Yeah.
With a rolling pin in the wrapped up in the tea towel, make a meatloaf for everyone. I loved it, James.
Is it me sitting on the cover like that? Like looking all surly and serious. Is it Ministry of Food? That sounds like a Ministry of Food
maybe
recipe.
It's Ministry of Food,
I think it's
man.
Ministry of Food. Yeah, so it's Mothership Recipes. So you've got one recipe.
Was there a chapter in it that was 20-minute meals in Ministry of Food?
Yeah.
There you go.
You weren't wrong.
There you go. I was right and wrong at the same time. Yeah. Ministry of Food and like, I really like, because when I moved to London, I was working in a school and I was doing comedy in the evening and I had this little gap in between those two things to have food. And so I was going straight to that cookbook.
And can you eat before a gig? Because I've heard a lot of comedians say that, like, no, nah, don't eat until after. And
I have very little respect for the craft. And so it was very easy for me to eat before a gig. The rice, that was the first thing I made from that book. Probably the first meal that I made on my own in a kitchen.
Really?
Was from that book. Was the, like, beef stir fry with the egg fried rice. And
it's kind of a moment, really, isn't it? Like,
you mean a lot to me, man.
Oh, well, I'm grateful that your parents chose me.
Connecting to you forever.
They obviously thought that you're in good hands.
Yeah.
How wrong they were.
I can't believe you've finally made a cocktail that can disarm the biggest arsehole on the planet, Jamie.
Consider me disarmed, Jamie. we always start with still or sparkling water on this podcast for your dream
still,
meal.
I have always still? No respect for sparkling. It just gives you wind.
No respect.
No, I mean, like, there is... I actually did a water tasting once. I'm not sure if this is a random story, but I'm going to tell it anyway. So when we opened 15 years ago, the Sun asked us to do, like, a water tasting, and my head sommelier, who's an amazing Australian, young, contemporary, cool sommelier, but, like, deeply geeky, but, like, cool with it. And he'd have amazing conversations with customers to get them the right... wine. They asked him to do a water tasting. So I came into the office above the restaurant and he had his feet up and he was looking at the piece that he'd written about a water tasting. Of course, it's like, you know, it's a bit shit, isn't it? It's kind of like wine sommelier and you're doing a water taste. So I just walked in and just said, only a wanker would have to do a water tasting, you know, and give him a bit of abuse. He goes, oh, my mum, he's on the phone. He goes, my mum's quite upset at him being so rude, but I didn't believe it was his mum. And then I had to pick the phone up, and it really was his mum. And because he's always like winding me up, I'm like, oh no. And but that was all sparkling water from different places and mountains and naturally sparkling, carbonated, and I still don't like it.
Still don't. Yeah. Nah, so even with that, and did you do the water tasting and get talked through it and stuff?
Yeah, it, like some's soft and some's hard. Yeah, just do you know what? Like, I quite like tap water.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe it's because it's free and that's more powerful than the nuances of... I don't know. I know that they're right, but I'm just happy to sort of just...
Just a big glass of tap water is the best, isn't it?
Yeah. And cold water on a hangover is one of the most beautiful things in the world, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
I love you.
Would you like that for your dream meal? Would you like the water that gets brought out to you at the beginning to be cold water and for you to have a hangover?
if the hangover only lasted until the end of the first sip.
Yeah. It just that's
just that relief that comes with the first sip of water and then the hangover goes.
Yeah. But have you ever had that feeling when you feel so rough that you look at the glass of alcohol or the bottle and you go, I hate you more than life itself.
Yeah.
And then you look at the water and go, I love you so much.
I really want like 7-Up or Sprite when I'm hungover.
Oh really?
That just feels like I really start to crave it and like I have to have it.
Barocca always feels like some form of fun.
Mm-hmm.
Mainly because your pee goes luminous, but...
Always fun?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it feels like, it's working.
Yeah. Whereas it's the opposite, isn't it? It's not working. Yeah. It's all the stuff coming back out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If forever, from now until forever, your pee was one colour, but it can be any colour in the whole rainbow, any colour in the world, what colour would you like to pee every single time?
Good question.
Thank you.
It's the most surreal question. I don't think I've ever asked anything so weird there.
We big each other up.
No, but that's amazing friendship. Yeah, I love that.
Appreciate that, mate.
Yeah. I mean, the colour of this wire, which is a vivacious, vivid blue, would be
blue.
A lot of fun and never get boring. What would yours be?
I was thinking blue. I was thinking like a WKD blue, like that kind of...
But the novelty would wear off straight away. Surely.
I don't think it would.
You'd have one day of doing a blue wee, and then you'd be like, well, that's just what my wee looks like now.
But also, going skiing would be fun.
Going skiing would be great fun,
Because then you get blue snow.
Blue snow.
Yeah, that'd be fun. I think
but
any
if
other
you think
colour...
About it, yellow's crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The fact mad. It's yellow is really mad.
Mad.
But if everyone's is yellow, then blue's more exciting, right?
That's true.
Yeah. You're the blue one.
Yeah.
I think anything else, people would think you were ill.
So it's like... Did you ever hear about the carrots?
Go on.
So, like, what colour are carrots?
Orange.
So, like, back in the day, the Dutch royal family, the House of Orange, like, obviously, technology, limited, X, Y, and Z. So their version of propaganda of how prolific the Dutch country farmers were was to take the original carrot that was purple and just turn it orange and make it so good and so prolific that... the world's carrots went orange.
What?
So that was like one of the earliest forms, in my opinion, of like edible propaganda.
Yeah.
So people think that carrots are orange, but that actually isn't. The original ones are those trendy ones you'll see at the farmer's market, which are purple. And if you cut them in half, there's a little bit of orange in it, and it's that bit they bred for. So my point being that if everyone's got orange pea, or yellow pea, and you bring out the purple, it kind of makes you feel smugly special.
Then everyone will.
Imagine going to a nightclub though and you're all pissing up the urinal and then you've got a streak of that coming out.
Yeah. Streak of the blue. Yeah, everyone's like, who's that called?
The guy by the soaps and the eau de toilette's gonna blow his mind, isn't it?
Yeah. Handing you a chubba chub, like, you okay?
Suck on this yellow chubba chub so we can turn it back.
Poppadoms or bread! Poppadoms or bread, Jamie Oliver! Poppadoms or bread!
Poppadoms through and through.
Yeah.
I mean, like, I'm a massive fan of Poppadoms.
Yeah.
I have been lucky enough to travel to India and see them used in many forms. I also used to work in an Indian restaurant.
What is coming in here?
Some poppadoms.
Some poppadoms. You surprised us at that.
Well, I knew you were going to say it. So this is...
you just bought in a tray of poppadoms.
That's a quarter of a poppadom that you know.
Yeah. I
wanted to show you some other poppadoms. So,
oh mate!
When one of the nicest things I did when I was much younger is, I don't know if it translates. I mean, it does translate into your game because I'm sure you've done your fair share of comic gigs for nothing.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. So in the chef game, you call it a stage, and you just go and work for a day, a week, a month, and I've done loads of time in just different. It's a way of going to the kitchen to sort of see if you want to work there or if you can learn some things, but like they haven't got to employ you. So it's just like, but I went and worked in this Southern Indian restaurant called Raza, and there's still one left in East London. And this is like a celebration poppadom, so it's essentially ground dal, which is lentils. So they're super healthy. So we know the round one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This one is basically a batter that's got a mold in it and it's dipped and shaken, and that's for celebrations. And also, like, a lot of Brits, we eat poppadom as like a starter or crispy bits at the beginning. But actually, that it's the poppadom is a texture that would normally be kind of crushed sort of over your rice to give you that's and you'd have it with part of the meal.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But this one obviously breaks up differently, and but also you can pick it up and scoop up the so that just to explain, like, this is like a star shaped.
It's beautiful.
Poppadom. So this is why I love poppadoms. Mm-hmm. This one is the same, but different spices piped out of a piping bag.
Yeah.
Straight in. And then this one is a poppadom as you know it, a slice of it, but dipped in a spiced batter of the same thing.
Right, right, right.
And it gives it an outer coating. So have a try that.
Thank you very much. It looks like a big Dorito.
Yeah, and have a dip of this, by the way. Like, seriously, like... Just, I don't want to overtake the format, but you might as well try something. No, it's, and it is free. I'm not going to charge you for it. free food.
That's the funniest thing to do to us at the end.
Yeah, bring the bill in at the end.
That's great. And the spicy batter isn't too overpowering either. It's just a nice spice to it.
Yeah, because I think, like, in Kerala, they're mainly vegetarian. They eat fish, but they're, like, so... If they're having a curry every day and a rice every day, the things that really change often are the pickles and the types of poppadom.
Yeah.
But also, if you look at that, this one, this is the piped out one that's got kind of like, I don't know how to describe it, it's like prickly, sort of wormy shape. Mm-hmm. But if you that shape sticks on all the sauce.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So,
oh, yeah, you get
it. Like a posh knick-knack.
Anyway.
In this one as well.
I hope you enjoyed that little...
I love it. I mean, I genuinely had no idea there were so many different types of poppadom until now.
Working in that kitchen was one of the most inspirational things for me, personally.
How long were you there for?
Only 3 weeks.
Yeah.
It was like a little stage. No one spoke any British. They were lovely people. I was annoyingly famous for saying the word pucker quite a lot in those days.
Yes.
Which is annoying. But I was annoying because I was 23 or 24.
Listen, we didn't find you annoying back then, Jamie, so don't even
I bet you bloody did.
No. Don't even feel like you have to say that kind of stuff. I love you saying pucker. It was great. You know what I found annoying? People getting annoyed at you saying pucker. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's like anyone who doesn't like pineapple on a pizza or anything. Yeah, that's not your opinion. You're just adopting it from everybody else. It's going, I wish you'd stop saying pucker. No, you don't. It's not factoring into your life. Shut up. Get me another cocktail.
I love it. Keep it rolling. No, but it's
amazing.
They say that word. Pucker means the real deal, authentic.
Yeah.
So the only word I could speak of their language was pucker. So it just made me worse. But what was amazing is, like, you know, when you're trained to cook, it's like recipes and protocol and this, that and the other. It was like 5:45. 15 minutes from service, and no curries were made on day one. And I'm looking at this dude, and it's a busy restaurant. And this thing just happened before me that just took me, it completely changed how I thought about fennel seeds and spice and layers of flavor. And this single man took 15, 16 different size pans. Every pan size was sort of, it had a relationship with how popular the dish was. And he then put coconut oil in every single pan on a hot top, and would then go through a range of 30 spices and would take a big fist and have half a shake, two shakes, one shake, and just layer and just go through.
Wow.
And every 20 pans, you know, 16 pans. And then by the time it was 6:05, there was 16 different curries made with vegetables, like whole fish, prawns, like done. And then for the next hour and a half, they'd all be just kind of reheated and popped out, all fresh, like ginger and curry leaves. And the curry that I'd grown up with, which I think is probably what we all grew up with, was more of a northern Indian, Bangladeshi-style sort of slow-cooked curry, like big, robust. This was like nothing. It was tropical.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. 10 minutes to make a curry.
Incredible.
Wow. So that sort of definitely made an impression on me. Anyway. I digress. Amazing.
So you'd have all of these. You'd have all these different kinds of poppadoms for your dream meal. You'd have the like a bowl like this with all the different ones in it.
Yeah, and I think metaphorically speaking, like the idea that one thing can be a whole world of things, mm-hmm. and like flatbread can be a whole world of things, and so I definitely everyone loves a poppadom, don't they?
Yeah.
Can I have the dips? Am I allowed the dips with it?
Yeah,
man.
Okay, yeah.
Have all those dips.
That's a coconut dip. I like the coconut dip over there.
This
is a garlic. Thing. Yeah,
oh,
garlic
man.
And lemon pickle.
It's so good.
That's a tamarind one there. But by the way, Raz is still going.
Yeah.
And it's East London, definitely worth a visit. Really good value. Mm-hmm. It's mainly vegetarian now, I think, which just makes it like super good value and delicious.
Let's start your dream meal proper now with your dream starter.
Okay, so it's quite a big question to choose one, but I kind of got it down to maybe my first understanding about the concept of a starter. Because mm-hmm. if you think about it, like, what is it? I know it's a starter, but like, just to have dinner. Like, so I was about 8 years old. I lived in the pub. So down the stairs was the pub. But since day one, like, Dad always had, like, he was a chef, but we had like 7 chefs in the kitchen. So I didn't realise it until I left home many years later, but he was actually one of the early gastropub dudes. So whole animals, fish days, crabs, lobsters, cooking everything, picking everything, you know, like local produce, game and all that business. And I remember one day the chef running up with such excitement, and I was tiny and I was looking up, and my mum's like, what's the matter with it? He goes, oh, you know it. And he was just going mad about these things called an avocado. and like, they weren't in the shops or the supermarkets. No way. Like, and I know we all have it now, and it's the most common. Like, I think more avocados were sold than oranges last year. It's like we've all gone avocado mad. But it's only a short moment of time. And I remember thinking, what on earth is he saying? First of all, A, how can a human be so excited about a vegetable? That's not normal. But as you can see, like, you know, I get quite excited about different food. But we didn't know how to touch it or feel it or cut it. And like, it was, but he turned it into, or put it in, like, a prawn cocktail. And I remember as an 8-year-old eating that. And if you think about it, for a kid, like, there's like salad in there. Well, most kids don't default to that.
Yeah.
There's like prawns, which, like, maybe they don't default to that. Mayonnaise, they probably do, and ketchup. Mm-hmm. But like, you put avocado through it. I remember eating that thinking, I totally understand. This is a miracle.
Yeah.
This is a miracle. You've got textures, sweet, sour, tangy, spice, you know, dash of Tabasco and Worcestershire sauce and a tiny bit of whiskey, like mayonnaise, ketchup, tiny thimble of brandy was the cayenne pepper, lemon juice, Worcestershire sauce, bit of Tabasco, like delicious with prawns. And actually, all my kids love that. I would have a prawn cocktail.
Yeah, made by that guy then, like that one that you had when you were 8.
Yeah, that was...
or one that you would make now for your kids.
Do you want us to erase the memory of avocados? Since the first time, we can Men in Black avocados away from your mind.
Yeah. I don't mind.
Yeah,
I mean, I don't. I'm not anti-avocado.
No, but then you can have avocado and discover it again for the first time,
like when you were 8 years old. So we can Men in Black you,
yeah,
and then you will have like that first ever.
Yeah,
yeah.
Let's do that.
Yeah, okay, cool.
Because I've had half of this cocktail and it is actually really working, and I'm really concentrating. Yeah. I'm looking at your mouth and everything, and I'm like,
yeah,
I still don't know what he's talking about. Yeah. I just erase me. It feels cool. Yeah. It feels cute.
Every Christmas in the Ancaster house for my whole life, the starter has been avocados with prawns. In like Mary Rose sauce.
Yes.
In the middle.
In the divot.
Yeah.
In where the stone used to be. And I'm covered in that. And that's like one of my favourite things every year. And I get very excited to have it. It's like a garlicky, actually not even a Mary Rose sauce. It's actually quite a garlic mayo that my mum and dad defer to. Love it so much. Like, I get very excited about it now. Like, as a kid, it was like, oh, that's just part of Christmas. But now I'm like really excited for each year. And if and God forbid this ever happens, I once turned up one year and my parents had decided not to do it, I would definitely... Yeah. That more than anything would
but
make
it's quite
like it
nice that
Christmas.
They... Yeah, I agree. Like, the thing that's nice about Christmas and sort of getting onto the vibe of this, that togetherness vibe, is I think we don't like change.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I even sit in the same place at Christmas. Like, I just like repeating the same thing. But I could only pimp that ride...
Mm-hmm.
Like, if I ever go to a pub and I see a prawn cocktail and I just size it up, and I'm like, oh, you dirty bastard. Okay. I'd go and I'd order it, have a pint of beer, but the way to pimp that ride is a portion of chips.
Oh.
But home, the proper chips.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Proper chips and prawn cocktail is a thing of beauty.
Yeah.
Are you dipping the chips?
I'll dip everything. Yeah. The whole, I mean, like, I just mix it up and get amongst it and... Do you know that the history on prawn cocktail was interesting? That it was, I think it went back to the American Prohibition
because
they didn't have any booze, so they weren't doing this. They had all the cocktail glasses free, not being used.
Oh.
So the chefs took them and then, I guess, came up with that. But like,
and sneaking brandy in by just tipping on.
Well, yeah, I don't know if that's a later fuck you, Prohibition. But there was a lot of underground booze, wasn't there? But
yeah.
Can you imagine trying? I can't believe they did that. Imagine to try and take away a new country's booze.
Yeah.
Well. It's, yeah, I mean they couldn't do it here.
No, good luck.
Ever.
Yeah, can you imagine? It wouldn't work.
That would be the end.
Yeah. I tell you what we wouldn't do, start innovating and using the glasses to make new starts. That's what absolutely not. There are no new dishes coming out of Prohibition in Britain. That would be it. So like if we didn't put, actually I've got two questions now. With the chips,
yeah,
would this be a dish you serve in your restaurant?
Go on.
Someone could order like a bowl of chips. And then you just dump a prawn cocktail on top of it and send it out for people. Like the only way the people.
I think you'd have to dump it tableside. Huh? You'd have to bring them the chips.
Yes.
You'd have to bring them the chips. Show them both.
And then just dump it on and go, there you go. You've ordered your chips a la prawn cocktail.
I think there's a way of making it work.
Yeah.
Hot and cold.
Yeah.
You know, hot and salty and crispy with soft and silky and tangy. Mm. Like, I got a mate that I went to college with he's in Cornwall and he's got a little outside holidays, summer restaurants. He's got a couple of them called Craftworks. And he does like street food, burritos and burgers and stuff like that. But he puts these little setups in farms with nice views and mainly takes the produce from the farm. And I turned up like last year and he gave me a portion of chips and kind of did did prawns and freshly picked crab from Port Isaac with like trendy mayonnaises, like sriracha, kimchi mayonnaises, different colours. And I have to say, it was one of the best. It's kind of what you're talking about.
Yeah.
I ate it and thought he was a genius, but
it's
one of the best things. I think about it all the time. When we went to New York in 2017 and we went to a place called Extra Fancy and they served us these sweet potato fries and they just dumped a clam chowder
on the top of it.
Really? Pretty phenomenal, yeah.
It was so good.
I mean, it is kind of theatre and bonkers and a bit surprising.
Yeah,
I like it. I mean, like the Canadians, they have the chips with the curds and gravy.
Yeah,
on the top.
Poutine. Yeah.
I mean, it's literally like a religion, isn't it?
Yeah, but it's you get the crispy ones and then you get the soggy ones at the bottom, and it's all good. But it's just the mix of all the different textures. It's so good.
Potatoes are good, aren't they?
Yeah, they're pretty good.
Have you ever grown a potato?
I've never grown a potato.
You ever grown a potato?
No.
You?
Ben? Shaking his head.
Even when I lived like in London, like with not much space, I used to grow them in like a tomato bag.
Yeah.
Were you the only one of your mates doing that?
Yeah, I was properly got the Mickey taken out.
Yeah.
I remember leaving school and everyone's like, "What are you going to do? What are you going to do?" And I'm like, "I'm going to be a chef." And then like, "Oh, you wanker!" It's like they thought it was a really rubbish.
Yeah.
They thought it was a really rubbish job. And I think for some reason, like, it's still not taken seriously, chefing. I don't think so. Like we're not oversubscribed for chefs in this country. If you talk to any restaurant anywhere in this country now, it's never been harder to get staff.
Right.
There's not queues of British people wanting to get chef jobs.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It doesn't exist.
Yeah.
But it is an extraordinary job that can take you easily around the world and back again, and you never have to theoretically ever go hungry. And you can get a job anywhere because everyone's always looking for a chef. And it is the most amazing window or key to any culture. Like I've, on multiple occasions, have been welcomed in incredible ways into families and homes, complete strangers, just because they know from my eyes and like no language, just seeing them cook something. And they say, "Well, come and try it." And you have a bit and have a bit more. Like, do you know, because as a cook, if someone goes, "Oh my God, I think we've seen that in lockdown a little bit, like the kindness of people. And
yeah.
I think cooking and this vibe is, the gift of making people feel good through either care or the group of people or like putting a scenario, music, a little like, did you do that? But also just like when people have chips, Mario, you know, that, I think it's a brilliant thing, but I don't know why more people don't go into it. I think the hours,
scared of the head chefs. Probably.
Yeah, I think that's...
I've worked in kitchens before.
Yeah, it can be frightening.
When I was working there, if someone said to me, "Do you want to go..." Well, I actively tried to not go. So in the kitchen that I was in, there was a back kitchen, there was a front line where they did all the mains and all the grills, and it was like a big deal if you went there. And I was offered to go there at one point, and I turned it down because the head chef was a bully, and I didn't want to go anywhere near him. And I think there's a lot of that sometimes of like, if I try and be a professional chef in that kitchen, that guy's just going to bully me, and that'll be it.
Yeah.
I say it to you because you're one of the few TV chefs who haven't been bullying people on TV.
it has been a problem historically, and I think they are high adrenaline environments. And then there's a degree of, like, you know, like certain industries, there's like a lot of noise, but it's just technical noise, not sort of personal noise. Mm-hmm. But certainly, like 20, 30 years ago, sort of an amount of violence, drugs, and bullying and inappropriate behaviour was sadly too common. Mm-hmm. I think it has got way better. And I think, you know, maybe social media's fixed some of that. But it is an amazing job, and who knows what will happen. Obviously, the whole industry's had a tough time in lockdown. Mm. It will take years to bounce back. And even if it could bounce back now, there's not enough people to help them bounce back. But I kind of, I'm hopeful that, you know, just talented, smaller, local neighbourhood restaurants, and, like, they are, that's what kind of makes neighbourhoods work, isn't it? Like, when you can get everything on an app.
Yeah.
I think in 5 years' time, it will be in a good place, but mm-hmm. it's going to be a bumpy few years.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.
Let's go on to your main course, your dream main.
Yeah.
And is this something that, like, is this one of your own recipes? Is this something you've had somewhere else?
Yeah, it doesn't have to be. But, like, I think a curry night. What I love about a curry night is colour, surprise. Like, you just take a bit of this, that and the other. Everyone builds their own kind of plate. But I just didn't grow up with that food.
Yeah.
Like, mm-hmm. it was classic English, maybe Frenchy style food. And, I mean, I sometimes eat stuff and I'm like, how did they do that?
Mm.
I mean, the Indians just cook so well.
And what I always liked about it when I was a fat little boy as well, Jamie, is I liked just the opportunity to have maybe four mains in one meal.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Just being like, oh, no, it's a side dish, and then have an entire plate of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sagaloo's a main, really.
Yeah. There's so many.
But also, they kind of made veggies pretty cool, right?
Yeah.
Onion bhajis. Come on.
Yeah.
Like a good onion bhaji, not a greasy, like heavy one, but like a good one. It's like, wow.
Yeah.
And somehow managed to make spinach like cool.
Yeah. Oh.
How did they do that?
Saag paneer was always my go to.
Yeah.
Well.
Yeah.
When I've been to India and I've watched children cook in the street and technically looking at how they're cutting and measuring and going, I don't know if I could ever do that.
Yeah.
Like that, and just thinking, God, I really must try a bit harder. It is, yeah.
Have you got a, normally we'd ask people, like, at this point, I mean, obviously we're going to get into what specifically you want for this curry feast, but, like, normally we probably ask people, what's the best curry you've ever had? Yeah. Probably can ask you your top three, probably. I bet you've got, like, a lot of ones that stand out that would be interesting to hear about.
Okay, so when I worked in Raza, they did this crab curry, which was like nothing I'd ever, and it had a lot of black pepper and incredible, like, curry leaves and bits and pieces and mustard seeds and coconut milk, and it's very fragrant ginger, and they just split the crab up and do this kind of very quick, you know, preparation, and it was absolutely delicious, and you can crack all the shells, and it was messy, it was delicious, it was completely, the meat is so sweet and flaky, blew my mind. I have to say, I do love like the kind of chicken tikka vibes. Anything, I mean, not specifically that, but like those marinated chicken ones, like in a tandoor where it's just blackened on the outside and juicy and white on the inside and luminous with spices and loads of lemon over the top and sort of dry, but in on the outside. Definitely would mix up the meat and the fish if I was building my own perfect. I wouldn't want to just go fish or just go veg or just, I want it all.
Yeah.
And then in the veg world, probably like either like a squash pumpkin curry, because I just think it's wicked and delicious. But this one was one that I saw but could never get the recipe to, so I had to just experiment. And that is basically paneer.
Yeah.
With the most amazing, like bonkers green spinach sauce. You get, you marinate the paneer and turmeric, and it's not that many ingredients for a curry, really. It's like fair, you know, it's onions, garlic, ginger, you know, it's, but that sort of green, luminous gravies, that with the chicken and the crab, beautiful rice. You did say poppadoms or bread. I do love a naan, but there is.
Yeah, but your main course is the curry feast. You can obviously have a naan.
Have a naan with the curry feast.
So you've hacked it. You've got bread and poppadoms.
Yeah, but there's another one as well.
All right.
There's this bread that is potentially better than naan called a paratha. And you basically lay out dough, like a simple dough, like this tablecloth here. And then you just, depending on what part of India they're from, it could be ghee or, you know, or it could be coconut oil, but they'll put their, you know, fat on it. And then they'll roll it up like this. And then they'll roll it up that way, like a sort of snail. And then they'll roll it out.
Yeah.
Cook it on a plancha or like a solid top or a grill or, you know, whatever on both sides. And then they beat it up. They're like, and when you do that, it all does that. Like this, like shards. And it, and what I think I've worked out is a little bit like that. Is they kind of, that bread is not just bread, but the kind of way it's made turns into like an edible fork. So you just like,
yeah.
And then so you want this edible bread fork that you can dip into all the other curries
yeah,
with.
Yeah, but like you were sort of saying earlier, like when you had that sweet potato chips and like the chowder went on top, it's like, well, what's going on?
Yeah.
Like when you bring the bread out and you put it on the board at the table and everyone's just chit-chatting, your mate's having a little drink, and then you're going, what's going on? But then like it's annoying for just enough time.
Yeah.
And then it's just like, try that. And it's like, oh, I get it.
Yeah,
damn.
Yeah.
So I don't know if this is getting too greedy for a main course.
But no, I quite
I think
it is a last meal,
especially
or
when
favorite
you,
meal.
Especially when you listen back to our episodes where we've had chefs on in the past. Often this is a theme in the chef episodes.
Yeah.
Is that it's not just one thing. It's often thinking about everyone eating together, loads of stuff going on. And so if we didn't allow this, it would be unfair because we've let other chefs do similar things.
So this is okay?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's when there's a chef on, all rules are abandoned.
Yeah, in fact, you're probably the first chef who hasn't paired every course with some booze at some point. So, you know.
Well, I think I've got a healthy relationship with booze. I mean, I do like booze, but I mean, I grew up in a pub. So weirdly, like, it's the opposite of maybe what you think. Like, you have to respect the family business. So I've always had a kind of, got to treat booze right, otherwise it can easily takes over you. And and as you probably know, like, the largest amount of alcoholics, I think, are surgeons, chefs, and
comedians.
But it's a problem.
It's
you know,
I didn't know that about surgeons, so that'll be,
and pilots.
Oh, great. Okay. That's me not sleeping.
So
tonight.
I was kind of thinking, like, if you were eating food at 36,000 feet, go into a country to have an operation. It ain't looking good. I gotta say that, like, I'm into cocktails and I'm into everything apart from mezcal and sambuca.
And is that because of bad past experiences?
Just terrible, It just represents everything painful that's happened as a teenager, probably. But I think beer is the place. I think beer has definitely got a good... I think that the natural beer would be a Cobra. But I've got a little beer shop that's opened in my little town. And he sources beers, great beers, from everywhere. Bonkers stuff.
Yeah.
And there's two beers. One's called Zut, Z-O-T. Delicious. That'll be good with this. The other one's called Slag. But there's another one called Posh. So if you buy a bottle of Posh and a bottle of Slag, It obviously says posh slag. Now, I don't see the funny side of it, but everyone seems to find it deeply funny.
Sure.
But some of those, like, Belgium, German, Dutch beers, they're so good.
Yeah.
And I think with a curry, they'd be amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're the beers where you take a sip and you're like, that tastes amazing. Then you look at the bottle, it's 10.5%.
Yeah, yeah, some of them can be.
Oh, I'm going to space, great.
Yeah, yeah. And they, some of them really can be. Yeah.
Look at that, I've got to fly a plane in a minute.
Yeah.
But it,
and remove this guy's appendix.
Powerful. And see, as a kid, because my job in the pub was, wash up, clean toilets, sweep out the front. Bottling up was one of the big jobs. So replacing what has been taken and then taking the empties out and recycling them.
Yeah.
I remember I did it for years and years and years for my pocket money. And I never understood the small bottles, the half bottles of like porters and all the high blue stuff. And it wasn't until later on I realised that all the older men would come in retired and they'd have a beer strategy. I never understood the concept of a beer strategy. This is very normal. Like, I'm generalising, but there's a clear association with higher alcohol and more flavour.
Mm-hmm.
So it's easier to make a tastier beer with more booze. So they'd start with a little bottle of something like 7-point-something. Like, woo! Come on! Get it going! And then they go right back down to sort of like a 3-4. Like, now we're going to go for the long game. But if you get it wrong, of course, then you're just... Yeah, you go to space and back.
Yes, no worry.
But I never understood it until... many years later.
So are we like having... Because normally we go on to dream side now. But is your dream side dish part of this feast or is there a different dream side dish?
I think the side dish probably was the naan and the paratha.
Yeah,
that's fine.
I don't know if that's allowed.
That's completely allowed.
Of course, you don't normally have a side of more carbs, do you? But
sure.
There is vegetable curries in the middle of the table.
But that's another strategy I think you learn in later life. I certainly learned in later life with a curry is... sometimes don't get the rice and the naan and then you got the poppadoms as well. Sometimes you can just have the bread and the curry and then you don't come away from it feeling like you need to roll down the corridor.
I agree. But often when you go in, you're so hungry that you get excited and then you overorder.
Oh, no, I always ignore my own strategy, but, you know.
Yeah. How many times have you knowingly overordered when you're ordering and literally as you're doing it, you're thinking... there's no way.
I kind of have to do it for a job.
Yeah.
Because contrary to what people might think, I do quite long hours at work and then I've got 5 kids. So I try and... who's that guy? That's your dad. So I try and be around for the kids. So I don't actually get to go to restaurants that often. So when I do, it could be posh or super underground or gnarly or whatever, but it's got to be good. Otherwise, I don't want to waste my time.
Yeah.
But then also, I want to see... what they're doing. So if there's 4 of us, I'll order for 10. So I like, well, everyone orders their stuff, but then I say, can we have a little plate of that in the middle? So it's kind of my job to overorder, which is kind of really nice, but also one of the challenges of the... I'm in the gym 3 times a week. I should be about 10 times the size, but I'm paid to eat.
Yeah.
Which is a really... It's a strange job. But I think if you want to get a full flavour of a chef, or like, it's quite good to... you can't do it with 1 or 2 dishes, unless you're really lucky. But like, it's quite nice to sort of see where they're going off-piste and, God, that hit it on the point and that was a bit weird, but kind of cool weird. And so...
also, if it's a good menu, you don't want to order 1 thing or 2 things, right? You need to get involved.
I often do all the starters.
Yeah.
Just like, great. Everyone's, you know, how are you doing, Bella? Like, you're having a good old chat, and you got to then you got to look, it's like homework, isn't it? Looking at it, like crying. And just say, look, just pick your mains, like, all the starters, please.
Yeah.
And that's a good vibe, because it's sort of, you get a little taster.
Do you like, I don't suppose you do like this, no one likes this, but have you ever had a waiter or waitress say to you, I think that's going to be too much? Like when you overorder and
this is a lot of food.
Yeah.
You're like, well, dude, I'll take it in half portions, or you can kind of feather it out slowly. Like, I'm not going to eat everything you give me. I just want to try it.
Yeah.
So you can give it to someone else if you want to. So it's that kind of banter.
Yeah.
And then they sort of go, okay, well, fair enough. I guess it is your job.
The other day in a restaurant, actually, I was with a friend and we ordered all our stuff and we went, is that enough? And the waiter went, yeah, that's a lot of food, which is the catchphrase. That's what they go for, right? It's a lot of food. And then we ate all of it. And he came back and went, You did a really good job with that. Yeah, I know. I know we did a good job.
Benito and I had the opposite experience recently. We went to a Mexican place and with some friends, and the waiter said, "Here, we don't like to waste food, so we'd like it if you..."
Oh, mate, he needs to be fired.
Only order this stuff.
He's never going to make any profit from it. Do you know how hard it is to make a pound in this industry? It's called upselling. No one's been promoted to undersell. Wow, okay.
But the thing is that then, because then, you know, because when you said about wasting food, it puts it on your conscience. So you're like, okay, I'm just going to order the amount that you said to order. And so we did that. And then afterwards, we were all like, "Do you know what? That was the perfect amount," and I'm quite relieved we didn't order more than that.
Okay, that's good.
So we were quite. Right. And by the end, I think we had both been turned around. We were like, "Who's this little punk telling us?" Well, actually, I was like that. Benito didn't care. He's a much more zen guy. But I was like, "Can you believe that, Benito? That guy said that to us." And then actually, by the end, it's like,
"What do you think would have happened if I was there?"
You would have gone, "Okay. I'll have more than that, please. And you don't tell me how to live my life." And then he would have gone away and you would have gone, "Why are you looking so uncomfortable, Benito? I spoke my mind."
I would have eaten it all, though, wouldn't I?
You would have eaten it all, and the guy would have had to eat humble pie. Yeah. And he would have had to eat the whole pie. So he doesn't like to waste food.
I mean, it is a big conversation now. I mean, like, I worked in America for quite a while and I just didn't understand the kind of, "I'll take a box." Mm-hmm. I mean, of course, it's great.
Yeah.
And so, but it's like it just did not exist in Britain. Maybe a little bit now. It's just not something we've done in Britain, is it? Sort of, "I'll take that to go, thanks."
Saying about the box to go home, I nearly said then, because I remember there was something at some point in my life, I can't remember if I was in a restaurant or whatever, when if you wanted stuff to go, they would get this tin foil, they would put the food that you were taking home in it, and they would fold the tin foil up in a certain way that it would have a handle on it.
Yeah, yeah.
And you would carry it out like that. And then I started to think, maybe I saw that on one of Jamie's TV shows.
That was, yeah.
And it was you.
I used to do it, yeah.
Yeah.
So, like, people, when I worked at the River Cafe, it's quite a glamorous restaurant, and still is. We'd have quite interesting, well-known people coming in, and they'd have this specific dessert called a chocolate nemesis, which was like the most incredible expression of chocolate. And people were like on it like crack. It was like their thing, and they all. So people would often take it if there was any left to go home. So I used to get like a box, cut it into the shape, wrap it in foil, sit a portion or two on that, and then wrap it in foil in such a way that it wouldn't get squashed, and then turn it into a handbag, because why not? And then because I thought I was funny, deeply not, I'd kind of write Prada on it or something, and then you'd give it to some glamorous person and they would walk out with a tinfoil Prada nemesis bag.
So your dream drink, was that going with the beers that we mentioned earlier, or is it something else?
I think my dream drink changes. Like, I didn't do beer for, like, 4 or 5 years. And my missus bought me, probably bad move, actually, but she bought me a membership to the Scotch Whiskey Society. And basically, you get a membership, you get a nice mag come through every quarter, and then you get these taster bottles come through. And they're always good, and you always learn stuff. And the mag's put together nice, and it's, like, interesting people and families and, you know. And then I hated whiskey as a kid. And it's like one of those things that like hating fennel seeds. It's sort of like, well, but do you really?
Yeah.
And the answer might be yes, by the way. But when what they do is they go, well, what style of whiskey do you like? So they kind of say, do you like it peaty or smoky or floral or this? And you go, that. And they get rid of all the others. And then within the world of that, they bring you 10 versions of that and go, well, do you like this, that, 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 or the other? And you go, well, that and that. And then they get rid of all the others. So anyway, the answer to the question is really good. Like single malt whiskey, definitely not smoky, definitely not peaty. And what's funny is like it's run or driven by like what I see is like Pacamac wearing geeks that are just like nuts about whiskey.
Yeah.
The notes are insane. Like, and like rude and contemporary and funny and ironic, and the names they call the bottles are like bonkers. But what's really interesting about it is like they're not brands. What it is, it's like white label. So what they have permission to do is to go and buy single barrels of anything. It could be the most expensive or it could be like the cheapest. But what's in that barrel is genius. And it has a number. And if you look up the number in the book or online, you can find out who made it. But basically, so it's like properly geeky. Anyway, so for the last 5 years, my favourite drink would be probably a triple shot of really good single malt whiskey, definitely quite fruity, and the kids in bed, ideally a fire lit.
Yeah.
Ideally, like, some tunes on.
What tunes you got on? Top Loader?
Last year in lockdown, there was an album done by Tom Misch and Yusuf Days, this drummer. Brilliant. I mean, honestly, one of the best things I've heard in years. That is an album. It's called What Kind of Music. It's literally, it's such a good album. So that on, firelit, an unusually large shot of single malt whiskey. I do break, like, they say you shouldn't do it. I do have an ice cube in it.
You've got to do what you like, though.
Wankers
right?
say you can't do
yeah,
that.
Yeah, yeah.
They say I only water from spring.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, I quite like it being too cold and tasting one way, and as it gets warmer, it tastes another way. So that's just my thing. Plus, by the way, it's full strength, barrel strength. So this can be like 52%.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah, you get a buzz on.
Yeah.
But that's all I do. I won't smash it, but that'll just... Anyway.
I think that sounds great.
Yeah.
Perfect. Beyond the moon with that. You went to space, didn't
you? Yeah, I went to space. Yeah.
So this is interstellar.
And something salty to have with it. You know, like poppadoms.
Yeah, more poppadoms.
So there's the saltiness there, but now, hopefully, we're heading to something sweet for the dessert.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah?
It doesn't
yeah.
have to be sweet.
Well, it does.
If you're on a cheese board, Jamie, you're very welcome to a cheese board.
Okay.
Well, Jamie, obviously...
Yeah, I mean, like, I could take you... I mean, I'm partial to cheese.
Lovely. Lovely cheese board.
The thing about cheese is, what I learned, I sent to my team here a box of cheese. It's, of all the things I've ever done in 20 years for my team...
It's the one thing they complained about?
It's the only thing they've really all been really happy about.
Oh, that's weird.
But I've done, no, everyone loves cheese, man. It's like, yeah. It's a thing.
Perfect way to end a meal.
Anyway, we're not having a cheese book.
Yeah, we're not having a cheese book.
We're not, but cheese is powerful. It would be my mum's, which by default is my nan's, trifle.
Mm,
lovely.
And it's quite old-fashioned. Mm-hmm. It's not supposed to be elegant, but it just sort of makes me feel... like the world's okay. And for some reason, I can switch off most things and say, right, that's enough. But with trifle, like, I could go on. It's just a beautiful sea of heaven. Sponge, sherry, custard, blancmange. And also, like, it can't be... I don't like homemade custard. No. It's got to be, like... It's got to be
birds.
It has to be. And tinned... clementines or mandarins.
What do you look forward to the most? Because when I think about a trifle, what I'd be looking forward to the most is always how the sponge goes in the in a trifle. How, like, the texture of the sponge in a trifle is what I immediately think of, and what I'd probably look forward to that mouthful where you got some, like, of that. I don't know how you describe it, how a sponge goes in a trifle, but that texture that you get, that you only trifle sponge.
Yeah,
different to any other sponge.
Yeah, because it's like. I think traditionally it was always like the old sponge or the old biscuits that they'd rehydrate.
Yeah, the sponge fingers.
Yeah, so if it's too dry, like even with a tiramisu, which is essentially a trifle, it's like if it's too dry, that's bad times. And if it's too wet, that's bad times. So you got to get the equation right, even though the individual parts are quite tacky. But what I quite like about those individual parts is they would always be in my nan's cupboards, tin fruit. You know, the tin custard powder, the blancmange, the sponges. My mum would make, like, just a vanilla sponge, and that was nice. And sometimes we'd chocolate, and that's nice. Sometimes she'd buy that little rolled up one with the jam in between the layers and slice that and put it on the bias. And sometimes it was the biscuits. But I kind of like just the straight sponge myself.
Yeah.
I'm open. I'm open to sponge inspiration. But I do like... the shaved chocolate and jelly is important.
Yeah,
yeah.
Jelly's not really fashionable anymore. I mean, like, do you remember the packs of jelly that you'd make jelly
for? Yeah.
Oh, eating that raw.
Straight, yeah. And mum would say, don't eat that, your stomach will set like jelly.
Yeah, told me I basically was like, you know, almost convinced it was poisonous.
Yeah.
The first thing I ate, knowingly thinking, this could kill me.
Really?
But in a way, it's just like mega jelly, right? It's the ultimate concentration.
It felt like mega jelly. It felt like so strong. The flavour in it, you're like, I just want that cube of, like, pure jelly.
And it's also it's like a little chocolate bar, right? You break it off in little chunks.
Yeah, in segments.
Yeah.
And so many E numbers that you get a headache within 30 seconds. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
That's when you know something's good when the headache kicks in after 30 seconds.
The thing about a trifle, you can't just make it and you're done. You do have to like do your layers and then let the custard set and then go back and do the next layer and let that set. But I do think like whipping the cream with a bit of sugar and vanilla, if you over whip it, it's rough.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's just wet, that's right. So getting that just soft peaks, I think we call it.
Yeah. Can you remember there was a time when, because obviously your grandmother taught it to your mum, did your mum then teach it to you? Was there a moment where you started putting the trifle together?
Yeah, I think I think I asked her for it like 15 years ago. And then it ended up in the Radio Times or the Times or something. She's like, I can't believe you printed it. It's just my recipe. I didn't ask her permission to print it.
But, it's similar as a comedian. My parents are constantly worried that every time they say anything, they're like, you're not going to use that, are you?
Yeah,
please don't put that in your
app. Especially when you say, so my dad used to do this thing where... And it's exactly.
Ed's act is full of stuff about his dad as well. His mum doesn't really feature that much, but his dad quite
gets
a bit.
It.
Yeah, the first time I
got a weird
did stand up on TV, I did a story about my dad. And I'd never done it before in the set, but I panicked because I was on TV for the first time, and I said his full name and job down the camera.
Oh, man.
And the next day when he went in, and he was quite important, they had it up on a big screen in the meeting room, and they were all watching it and laughing.
Oh, so and he was really proud of his son?
Yeah.
His dad is weird, though. So, like, I don't think it would have fazed him at all. He's a weird guy.
Yeah.
And you wouldn't know it from
what
talking
does he
to
do?
Ed. I
what
mean,
does he
Ed's
do?
Got... You can still see a little glimmer of
was
it in
He was a solicitor, like, and now he's retired. And I believe this episode is coming out the day before my wedding, so you will be... If my dad has listened to this...
Yeah.
Then you will be seeing him the day after it's come out, so...
Yeah, but that's fine. I'll happily tell him he's a weirdo to his face.
And what's the weirdest part of him?
He writes emails to his cat's vet and pretends to be the cat and refuses to ever break character or let on that it's not the cat.
Yeah.
I mean, that's persistent. That's quite funny.
Yeah, yeah.
Although Ed's relationship with his dad is... They bond over food quite nicely. So there's a thing where, you know, Ed will sometimes, you know...
I'm on a WhatsApp group with my dad called the Barbecue Boys.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, yeah. And Ed will send him photos of... stuff he's about to cook, and then his dad will ring him and go, well, I cooked that once, Ed, and then here's what I did. And so that's quite nice. So, you know, there's loads of nice stuff. Just, you know. Also, my main impression of Ed's dad really comes from Ed's impression of him in his stand-up.
Yes.
So in my mind, Ed's dad is always speaking like that.
Yeah.
Like he's announcing something.
I dial it up a bit.
Like
Of course. But I remember doing a... Sometimes you do throw, if you're in the public eye, you do throw your parents under the bus.
Yeah,
I remember shooting a recipe in Southend Pier in the background. Mum, Dad and Nan on deck chairs behind me about 10 metres away. And I had a fire going and I was cooking this dish. And I sort of said what I was doing and where I was. And I said, and within our family, like, it's known that I was conceived either in a Capri or at the end of Southend Pier. And so I said, look, we're here, it's in Southend, this is Southend Pier, the longest pleasure pier in the world, and I was actually conceived at the end of that, and my mum's going, no, I wasn't! And I just kept it at the camera and went, look, I was, mum denies it. All I'll say is you'll know the truth just by the reaction of my dad's face. But it's like, I remember getting a real rollicking from my sister, saying, you've just really embarrassed me. Like,
I'm going to read your menu back to you now and see what you think, Jamie.
Okay.
How you feel about it? Water, you would like cold, still water with a hangover that disappears at the first sip.
Yes.
Poppadoms or bread, all kinds of poppadoms, plus the dips.
Yes.
Starters, avocado prawn cocktail. And you'd like to not remember avocados and then eat it and then be introduced to avocados.
Again.
Main course, a curry feast night. Crab curry, chicken curry, paneer curry, side dish of naan and paratha.
Yeah.
The drink, you would like a single malt scotch whiskey triple shot with an ice cube. This is like 52%. There's a fire on.
That's after the beers with the curry.
Can that
be like a fourth course?
You can have the beers with the curry. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. We'll let you have posh and slag and all those beers
mentioned. Yeah.
And dessert, you would like mum's/nan's trifle.
Yes.
That sounds very nice. You feel good hearing that back?
I mean, I was going to say something pretentious like it doesn't flow as a recipe, but it actually sounds like a wicked night out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, that's what we found doing these podcasts is that I don't think anyone's dream meals flow necessarily.
No.
They just have all their favourite stuff.
They're little snapshots.
And, yeah.
It would be nice to have that dinner over 5 hours, I think.
Yeah.
Don't want to rush that one.
No.
You've got the whiskey by the fire.
Yeah, that's got to be an hour, right?
If you're there before your dessert, having the whiskey by the fire, doing all that, and then you have a trifle, that's great.
Yeah, that meal sounds absolutely delicious.
I hope that was all right. I mean,
it was great.
Like, I kind of feel like reenacting it, but we did get some. I am surprised that I'm the first person to give you, like, nibbles and a drink. So maybe, do you think it might set the tone for future guests to maybe...
Knows. Other guests might, who knows, but like, you know...
It is effort. I mean, if a little bit of effort wouldn't go amiss, really.
But no one will do it for the Poppadoms course, because if they're like, oh, Jamie Oliver came on and gave me five types of Poppadoms, like, I can't compete with that.
I think people need to get creative. They need to come with something like a cooler box of treats.
Yeah, little box of treats. Hey, we're not discouraging.
Yeah, I don't think so. It's nice.
I think you set the new standard.
Wouldn't it be good?
Yeah.
Although, you know, I'm the genie in this dream restaurant who brings you anything, and now I feel like you've... before my very eyes, transformed into a genie, and you've given me food.
Jamie's going to be sucked into the lamp now and is the new genie.
Yeah. Do you want to come into the lamp with me, Jamie?
Suck me into your lamp.
So I'm about to go back into the lamp. Do you want to be sucked into the lamp?
I'll come with you.
Come on in.
Yummer, yummer, yummer. Ooh, great menu from Jamie Oliver there.
Great menu, great journey the whole time. You know, loads of things that we learned about different periods of time in his life, in his career,
now,
his family.
Great chat. Loved meeting Jamie. Really enjoyed it. To the listener, have you ever tried to conduct an interview with a plate of absolutely delicious poppadoms sat in front of you but not wanting to eat them because it would be too crunchy?
They're so crunchy. But, you know, I had to really balance out. Well, it'd be too crunchy. Might, you know, ruin the audio a bit. Also, I like winding up Benito, and I like it when he's stressed. So you think, oh, if I just crunched all these and just ate them for like the whole podcast, he'd have a nightmare on his hands.
God, they're so delicious. We're going to take some home.
Yeah, we're taking some home in a box each.
And let that be a lesson to you future guests.
Yeah.
If you don't provide us with a delicious cocktail and a platter of poppadoms or other snacks, then you can get out of here.
Yeah, maybe we'll kick you out, regardless of whether you say the secret ingredient or not, which Jamie did not say the secret ingredient.
No, he did not say turkey
Twizzlers. Thank you, Jamie. Oh,
imagine if he brought in a big old steaming plate of turkey Twizzlers.
Like if this was the podcast he chose to do it on.
Going, yeah.
Ha! Guess what? I love them. I never hated them. I've always loved them. And we'd have to go, we're kicking you out. Like, oh, what? Oh, no.
Very, very glad he didn't say it, because that was a wonderful chat. Thank you very much to Jamie for coming on. And Jamie's new book, Together, is out now. We've got a copy here, James. We've been given a copy, which is lovely.
I'm absolutely going to...
Every page I flick to, I'm excited about what's on there.
Yeah.
So I will be genuinely doing some cooking.
Yeah.
Once I'm married.
Yes, you will get married soon to that to your French teacher from
school. My French teacher. So, thank you very much to Jamie. I'm on tour as well.
You are on tour, actually.
In Feb 22, electric, Feb till April.
Yeah.
Go and check out my tour dates, edgamble.co.uk.
Yes.
Tickets avail.
And I'll be teching that show.
Yes.
Hello, Jamie.
Hello.
No, look, and it's
been
weird.
Yeah. Oh, you got some sax pants. You bought in some sax boxer shorts.
The same thing is, you thought it was just me joking.
Literally.
You have to look. This is the TM.
Yeah. That's the. So if I'm having a little look inside.
That's ballpark technology.
Oh, so you tuck them in the little pocket.
I mean, look. Oh, that is literally a little pouch for your balls. That's in there, Jamie.
I was going to reach in and have a look closer, and then I realised they are genuinely your pants, aren't they?
You've just taken them off in the toilets and then brought them back in to show us. It's hanging out there like Bruce Springsteen. Yeah. Now. Hanging out in your jeans, your boxers. No one will know.
They look amazing. No, I'm going to check them out. Yeah, they cradle them. Yeah. The cradle.
Anyway, weird. Thank you, Jamie.
See you, Jamie.
Well, very rarely do we get a reprise from the guest during the outro. I think that's the first time that's ever happened, let alone they come in and show us some boxer shorts that they were possibly may or may not have been wearing earlier in the day and show us where the balls go in the boxer shorts. But it's happened, and if at the start of this crazy journey known as Off Menu, someone had told us, one of the episodes, one of the guests will leave to go and do an interview respectfully for the one show, but then reappear during the outro to show you their boxer shorts and where the balls go in it. I would not have thought, well, that will be Jamie Oliver. But that's what's just happened to us in our life. And special.
Yes.
Very special moment for us there.
I was genuinely about to reach in and touch them.
Yep. You were about to touch where the balls go to see, oh, where they go. And then you realise, as you were about to do it...
They've just been there.
The balls have literally just been there.
I was gonna reach in and touch the pants.
Yeah.
Because he had the pants. He didn't come in and pull his trousers down. I just didn't want to make it clear to the listener what happened.
He had
the
boxes
in his hand. He didn't come in, pull his trousers down and go, have a look at the ballpark technology. Look at where they go.
Yeah. Okay. He came in holding some boxer shorts.
Yeah.
With his trousers up.
Yeah.
Trousers up, zipped up, done
I'm
up.
Presuming he has other boxers on the premises.
Yeah. He was holding a pair of boxers.
Yeah.
Said, look at these. Came round, opened the boxers up so we could look inside the boxers, and you can see that there was a little compartment for the balls there. Yeah. I didn't think about this, that maybe people listening at home thought he came in, pulled down his trousers, said, look at these, then look at where the balls go, and Ed was at one point tempted to reach in and touch them.
Yeah.
Because that isn't what happened.
No, that sounds bad.
Well, it sounds unusual for the pod.
Mm.
You know, it's not standard pod practice, but... Yeah, I forgot that the listener can't see what's happening, so they may have thought that Jamie Oliver just came
in. Sorry about that sound. I'm reaching in and scratching my balls.
Yeah, that was Ed scratching his balls. Just scratching
They're
his
a bit dry today,
crackly
actually.
Balls.
A little bit dry.
Oh, this is what an episode it's been. Didn't think it would end this way. This is the kind of episode I'll get a lot of texts from my mother about.
Yes. Some people don't make it to the outro with podcasts sometimes.
No.
So they're going to miss out on that.
People miss out. This is like, you know... An MCU and end of credits kind of thing.
Yes, it is.
End credits sequel, and some people go, oh yeah, and the bit when he came in and showed them the compartment where the balls go, and everyone will be like, what?
I didn't hang around for that.
What the hell? All the fair weather listeners, what the fuck? What are you talking about? It's like, you don't listen to the end. There's a little bit at the end. If you stuck round, you listen to all the post credits. After that, Jamie Oliver re-enters the room. He takes out of his pocket a pair of PAX boxers. Sax boxers, sorry.
Didn't get the name wrong.
S-A-X-X, sax boxers.
I know they're sax boxers because they made a great joke earlier in the episode and only Benito heard it.
What was it?
Well, both of you and Jamie spoke over it.
Yes.
I was saying, does he bring new male employees in and tell them they're going to get the sax?
Oh, I did hear that.
Yeah. Well, you didn't laugh.
In my head.
Benito.
Yeah, laughed. Benito laughed.
Yeah, that's who I'm aiming at anyway.
Give him the sax.
Right, let's pop off, shall we?
We may as well go, although, you know, I feel like if we sit here and talk for longer, he'll come back in and there'll be other stuff. You know, be a shame to miss that. But, yeah. I mean,
sorry,
yeah.
I'm having some more of this chutney.
Yeah, you can eat some more of that chutney on the Poppadom. Everyone else, you know, we'll see you on the next Pod-O-Cast Alar.
Hello, I'm Lou Sanders, and if you've enjoyed this podcast, you might like my podcast, Cuddle Club. It's about cuddling, yes, but really it's just a way into relationships and asking cheeky questions like who was your mum's favourite and when were you last unfaithful? Previous guests include Alan Davies, Ashling B, Catherine Ryan, Richard Osman, Ed Gamble, Nish Kumar and other legends. Get it on Acast, Apple Podcasts, Spotify or wherever you get your all podcasts. And remember to CC everybody in if CC stands for Cuddle Club.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Lucy Beaumont.
And guess what? I'm Sam Campbell.
if you enjoy, there's another podcast just coming out. Oh no, the podcast is out now.
Yeah, if people have enjoyed Off Menu, will they enjoy Lucy and Sam's Perfect Brains? I don't know.
There's a bit of crossover. We talk about maybe, you know, a couple of food issues. We talk about cutlery, and that's near food. We reckon it's out now. Not soon, it's now.
Is it on all the platforms?
Oh, it absolutely is. If you like James and if you love Ed, you might get a kick out of this. But yeah, again, no pressure. But yeah, this one's out now. Lucy and Sam's Perfect Brains.